AgBioScience is supported by Indiana Farm Bureau.
In terms of the bolus itself and in terms of methane suppression, I think you're starting to have a conversation that's going to get a lot bigger.
Welcome to AgBioScience, the number one podcast in the world for innovation in food, animal health, plant science, ag tech, and agriculture. Here is your host, Agrinova CEO, Mitch Fraser.
Welcome back to AgBioScience from the Animal Health, Nutrition, and Technology Innovation Conference in Boston. There are over 1 billion cattle globally emitting methane through a natural process called enteric fermentation. Reducing emissions have become a top target of innovators across animal health, and one New Zealand company is advancing an innovation that tackles the challenge from inside the cow. This is going to be a lot of fun. Welcome, Mark Weldon, chairman of New Zealand-based Ruminant Biotech. Mark, welcome to AgBioScience.
How are you?
I am absolutely fabulous. And Mark, we were just talking before we jumped on here. We absolutely have to dig into this challenge of methane, this challenge of greenhouse gas emission. Methane makes up approximately 6% of global greenhouse gas emission. The team, your team at Ruminant Biotech, working to reduce that using a bolus in cattle. Walk us through the technology. How does RBT work?
The idea of a bolus is really simple. Farmers use them today for a variety of purposes. The complicated aspect of it is really material science, because we've got an active ingredient that stops methane being produced. That ingredient is bromoform. And we need that ingredient to be released on a consistent basis over a long duration, multiple days at a time. So you've got to sort of get the materials to work to allow it to seep through those materials and perform its function. So it's really a material science company in a way. Pretty simple platform. Farmers know what it is, and that's one of the real benefits of it, we believe, which is it's not a change to anything that happens on the farm.
What was so amazing to me is when you hear that and you know that it's a typical delivery vehicle, it's not an unknown to ranchers. The unlock in my mind, though, was many times methane reduction is tackled through a feed ingredient,
yeah,
the feed additive. But if those cattle are grazing in an open pasture, well, they're not eating feed that you can add a feed additive to. Was that really the genesis of the company?
You know, the genesis of the company in terms of the human side was a couple of pretty strange but brilliant veterinarians from a small town in New Zealand who were doing a lot of reading about methane and effectively got hold of some chemicals, got hold of some beeswax, sort of hijacked some university laboratories and ran something they called a trial. It wasn't a trial. It was effectively a mini pilot.
Okay.
They gave me a call and said, look, do you think we can commercialize this thing? I said, I've got no idea, but it sounds pretty bloody interesting. So that was how we sort of got started, I think, as a company. In terms of the bolus itself and in terms of methane suppression, I think you're starting to have a conversation that's going to get a lot bigger.
Well, it's this rising focus on greenhouse gas emission, methane's particularly in cattle. What's driving the focus? Is it we have a better ability to detect methane now, and so more people are focused on it? Or is it more that we're focused on it more, so we're finding new ways to tackle it? Which is it that's driving this focus?
Yeah, I think it's three or four things. I think the first is you've seen people move away from conventional agriculture, and you've seen a lot of sort of quite politicized media around big ag, and you know, so it's a topic of conversation on the street and in the cafeteria that it never used to be, would be the first thing. I think it's fair to say. The second is you've got a lot of very large companies globally like Nestle and Danone who've made commitments to reduce their overall emissions profile, and they actually can't achieve that unless emissions sort of are reduced significantly on the farm. I think the third aspect of it is, although 6% of emissions doesn't sound a lot, it's three or four times as much as the entire aviation sector. So it is becoming known that especially cattle are a problem. And look, I guess to your earlier point, 80% of cows, approximately, no one's really had the need to measure it before, don't spend all of their time in a barn and in a lot. So you've got to figure out a way to solve the problem as it exists for pastoral grazing. So there's a lot more attention on hard problems to solve than there has been before, yeah.
This focus on methane, this focus on how do we deliver the intervention to get to the outcome, is one that ag tech, animal health overall has battled for generations. And I think the challenge ultimately often comes back to, do the producers actually make money? And we talked about it here on stage today, that this idea that there has to be value created from the farm gate to the dinner plate or wherever that end point is. How are you at Ruminant Biotech thinking about driving that incentive, driving that advantage all the way to the rancher through the food system?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think the other factor about the agricultural sector that's real is that it's very politically powerful, right? So if you think about the farm bill in the United States, you think about the swing states in the United States, you think about the power of the New Zealand dairy farmer, the power of the French farmer, you know, on their tractors, right? So you actually have to have technology solutions. And I think the market has recognized that. For quite some time, there was a view that states or federal governments would simply regulate a reduction in emissions. That sort of intersects with the other problem, which is the world needs cost-effective food and it needs, yes, a supply chain. So you really are finding at least a backroom, I think, political consensus that once there are cost-effective and safe technologies, things will change quite quickly. But it really does come down to economics, and the two sides of economics are, at least in the long term, in the short term you might get some distortions. There'll be subsidies without doubt, there'll be regulation and requirements without doubt, but I think in the long term the economics come down to the cost and they come down to the price of carbon, and the difference between those two things will drive the economics. I think it's pretty clear. In terms of cost, and going back, Mitch, to your previous question, which my slightly jet-lagged and befuddled brain sort of forgot while we were doing it. The beauty of a bolus from an economics perspective is we don't have to go into, and I'm not being critical of seaweed-based companies, but we don't have to buy boats and go into the ocean and build a whole new production system, build a whole new supply chain, deal with tons of waste, and then ship something around. It's pretty low capital intensity. And the other great thing about the bolus, you know, you think about carbon markets generally, one of the challenges, and we've all heard about the hectare of forest that's been sold four times over, right?
Right.
One of the real challenges is how, if you're going to get credit, whether it's just from a market force or from a regulator or from a corporate like Nestle, how if you're going to get credit for using a product? Because you're not going to run around and measure each cow in your herd and measure its methane. So one of the beautiful things about this product design is that we can stick RFID and other technologies inside it, so a regulator and auditor can simply scan a herd and go, yes, trials show methane reduction of 80% plus, that's in the cow, you're good.
Right.
Feed-based products, apart from purchasing the feed, it's really hard to sort of prove methane mitigation. So there's a number of different aspects, I think, that have to all be in place for a market to develop that is not only one that works for the farmer, but it also works for the consumer and it works for the regulator. And so far, no technology has solved those three dimensions.
Absolutely incredible. We'll look at where the market is headed and the role of biotech. We'll do it right after this. Ag Bioscience is supported by Indiana Farm Bureau.
From berries to dairies, from crop advisors to data analyzers, Indiana Farm Bureau is at the forefront of the top issues impacting Indiana agriculture. No matter your role in the ag industry, Indiana Farm Bureau membership means you'll always have a champion and an advisor. And because so much of your time is focused on your own enterprise, it's also good to know Indiana Farm Bureau is always working to fight for the future of agriculture. We come together to advocate for rural viability, the protection of property rights, competitive tax policies, and against burdensome regulations. Whether our members need a door opened, an impact in public policy, or an ally to strengthen their communities, Indiana Farm Bureau is there.
we are the unified voice for all agriculture. To learn more about the benefits of Indiana Farm Bureau membership, go to infb.org.
Welcome back to Ag Bioscience. We're talking with Mark Weldon, chairman of Ruminant Biotech, a New Zealand-based biotech company. Mark, we have seen a tough market, I think, is probably an understatement in terms of raising venture, supporting these biotechs that are going from really proof of concept into commercial scale. You've done an amazing job. The team at Ruminant Biotech have done an amazing job raising capital, finding product market fit. What's driving, in your mind, there's been a whole lot of folks tackling this methane reduction market. What's driven differentiation for Ruminant Biotech compared to others? And what are you hearing from investors? What are your team hearing from investors of why this is different?
It was really interesting, in particular being at an ag tech conference, because the investors we speak to are 75-80% not typical investors into the agricultural animal health space. They're more investing into clean tech, into climate tech. There's quite a lot of purpose-driven capital. There's a lot of funds that have dual criteria around good returns and doing good, sustainability being criteria. Right. So there's probably a broader pool of capital available. And it's also interesting capital in that it is, by its very nature, longer duration, because the problem is a longer duration problem. And the interesting thing about methane mitigation in particular is, if you believe even the most back of the envelope numbers around what size the market will be, even if you disagree on when the market will be at the smaller size, it's going to be really, really, really big. And no one has an established position in it yet. So the other type of investor we're seeing are quite strategic players who are looking to take essentially a portfolio approach across a number of different platforms. And I think what has been really good for Ruminant is three things. One, the product is simple to explain and it works. Like, the data, the tests show that it works. We've had a bolus in the most recent trial in a cow, or cows in a herd of cows, lasted over 100 days and knocked down methane over 75% on every single day, right, with one dose. So the numbers are really good. Wow. The second thing we've done is and this is actually the first media, believe it or not, that we've actually done, we've had a very deliberate, stay silent and invisible approach so we could get as many patents in place as possible before anyone figured out what we were doing. So we're working with attorneys here in Boston, actually, Fish and Richardson. We've got some great global advisors in that area, and we've got, we believe, about 85% of the global pastoral grazing herd covered with our patents, right? So that would be the second thing, and I think related, or the intersection of those would be the third that has made us attractive to capital, is that most of the money and the other people in the space are really delivering something that is only feasible in a barn. So this works in a barn, but it also works outside of the barn. And for those people who have an interest or a commitment to reduce their emissions at the farm level, then you've got to do it outside of the farm gate. The other fact, which your audience is probably interested in, is there's more methane produced per cow on pasture than in a barn, because it's a higher fiber diet. So it's quite a simple thesis to sell, really. And then they've got to take their punt on the people. So,
Well, today you are in New Zealand. How are you thinking about now, with sort of the IP, I don't say chapter closed, but IP buttoned up from a protection standpoint? How are you thinking about this global market? How are you thinking about scaling Ruminant Biotech beyond New Zealand?
There are two types of markets globally. There's the unregulated market. Australia is the main unregulated market, not particularly surprising given their establishment as a penal colony that they are unregulated. And then you have the rest of the markets, the United States, EU, Canada, New Zealand, where you are as a product going to fit into the regulated animal health process. And that's a relatively long process. So the next 24 months for us involve a soft launch commercially in Australia, where we can just put the product into the market, and we've just crossed the minimum viable threshold with the latest trials. But more of the money will go into working in the US and working in the EU with partners to make sure that we compile the relevant dossiers and information and manufacturing specs and field trials necessary to get to in toxicology to get the product approved and available for sale. So you've hit on a key point. New Zealand is a long way away. It was a trending topic for a while on will I move to New Zealand over COVID. you know, it's very safe, it's beautiful, it's bucolic, it's a fantastic place to live. The problem or the risk or the issue is that you can become very focused on your own very small, very local market. So the other factor is we're starting to build out a team in Australia, and then after that we'll be doing that here in the US. So, which for me is actually pretty cool. I lived here for 10 years and I love the place, so I'll get to come back a bit more.
Well, when you get ready to make a move to the States, know you have a friend in Indiana who would love to be helpful.
We'll come and say hi.
Would love to be helpful. Yeah. Maybe one, I'll give you two more questions. One is this, I think sustainability, you've mentioned it a couple times, but I think I want to jump into this one a little deeper. Sustainability is so often thought about around ecological sustainability. You mentioned different kinds of capital coming in that are also thinking about ecological sustainability, but also economic sustainability, those two halves of a whole. How are you thinking about, from a strategic standpoint, as chair of the board, thinking about how do we navigate this so we're clearly delivering meaningful value for the environment, but also meaningful value for our customers, for producers, and for our shareholders?
We think they're pretty closely related, and I think part of the, we've got a really, really great team, and what has attracted most of them to the company is the opportunity to have impact, but it's impact in a commercial context, which means there has to be a viable product and a real demand for it. So my view of sustainability, Mitch, is very similar to yours, which is it has to be able to stand on its own two feet. You know, you might get a subsidy, you hopefully will get some grants to get going if there are, you know, if there's capital market formation or if there's some things that have genuine public benefit rather than private benefit. But ultimately it's got to be a commercially valid proposition.
It's really powerful, and an area that has been talked about quite a bit here at the Animal Health Nutrition Innovation Technology Summit here in Boston. As you look back on the brief time we've been together here in Boston, Mark, what are the big takeaways from this event? What are you walking away from here in Boston?
Well, I'm a little bit of an outsider. It's not my background, and my big takeaway is actually how nice all the people are. It's a lot friendlier than going to sort of financial market conferences. So that would be my big takeaway from the conferences. I'll come to another one. The people are really cool.
Yeah, that's great. It's great. Well, he's Mark Weldon, Chairman, Ruminant Biotech. Mark, a delight to be with you. You mastered jet lag beautifully.
I'm not sure about that.
Thanks again for joining us. I appreciate it. All Thank you for tuning into Ag Bioscience. You can always get the latest Ag Bioscience news when you need it online at agrinovusindiana.com. On behalf of the entire Agrinovus team, I'm Mitch Fraser saying thanks for listening. We look forward to seeing you real soon.
Bioscience is a podcast by Agrinovus Indiana, hosted by Mitch Fraser, produced by Kayla Chittister and Fabian Rodriguez, photography and design by Kaylee Kerr. If you liked today's episode, subscribe, rate, and review so we can bring you more conversations just like this. Get all episodes of Ag Bioscience at agrinovusindiana.com.